And now let us be called to worship. Another miracle. This day, this place, this time to be together. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Another call to awareness of the people who have fathered us, biological or not, nurturing our becoming. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Another call to gratitude as we cherish this community, even as we prepare to disperse. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Another day to act with kindness and love. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. We would invite the children or the very young at heart to come forward for our children's time.
Today we're going to learn about a man who loved beauty and freedom. He's also the man who created the flower communion that we in most Unitarian Universalist congregations celebrate each spring.
I'm going to wonder why you're all sitting off the carpet.
It's very
And
clean.
Now that we got that straight, I'm going to show you a picture of Norbert Chapek. You may have seen it spelled C-A-P-E-K, but he pronounced it Chapek. So can you see it? And I'm going to hold it up high for people. I thought I was holding it high.
I can hold it high. So has anyone ever been to a flower communion before in the past? Do you, maybe not, I guess. Well, if you have or haven't, after today you'll know what a flower communion is all about, and you'll see what the meaning is and how it works.
And you can have that picture. So Norbert Chapek lived more than 100 years ago in some place that we now call the Czech Republic. It's had different names at different times. His family was very poor, and they lived on a farm. Have you ever been to a farm? Yeah? Anyone ever been to a farm? Have a farm? Had lots of animals, had cows and pigs and chickens and goats. He loved the farm. He loved to help his family with the farm and do all the chores, but he loved something even more than the animals. He loved music. He really loved music, and he learned to play the clarinet, the organ, the flute, the violin, the oboe, and the bugle. That's not only a lot of instruments, but it's different kinds of instruments, because the oboe and the violin and the organ are very different. Have any of you play an instrument? Yeah? What do you play?
I play clarinet.
You play clarinet. Dale gives piano lessons. Just in case you were interested. When Norbert was 9 or 10, he was chosen to help at the Catholic Church where they belonged. The Catholic Church is a lot different from our church, and he really loved it because he got to wear this fancy white robe and walk around really serious in the ritual, and he thought that was pretty important and pretty special. He liked that. But he noticed he didn't like a lot of the things that the priest, who was like the minister, said, because that priest would often talk with an angry voice, kind of yelling at people, and he didn't like that. He thought church should be a place of kindness and love and caring. So
when Norbert was about 12, his parents sent him to live in the city with his uncle. They, as Reverend Anita noted, they were very poor, and they wanted him to have a better life. So he went there to live with his uncle, who was a famous tailor, and he helped out his uncle doing that as one of his assistants. The city that they lived in was very big, had lots of different churches, and Norbert would go to different churches to see what they were like. And one day he went to a Baptist church, which is different than a Catholic church, and it's different than ours. It didn't have all the beautiful chanting and processions that the Catholic Church had, but the minister did speak of how important it was to lead a good life, to treat people kindly and to think for yourself. Does that sound like something that you might hear here?
Yeah, I think so.
So, when Norbert told his uncle and aunt that he had attended a Baptist church, they got very upset about it. Because the Catholic Church was the only religion that was accepted at that time in that place. So, they got very angry at him, and they told him that he had to leave the house. So he left. He was 18 years old, he left, and eventually he stuck with the Baptist church and he became a Baptist minister. He preached to grown-ups and he also taught children religious education.
And after he was a Baptist minister, he got married. Catholic priests couldn't get married, but Baptist ministers could. And he married a woman named Maria, and they raised 10 children. Ten. Anybody here live in a family with 10 children? Yeah, it's not too many these days, but they had 10 children. And as time went on, he found that his beliefs started to change. So you find that even long ago, grown-ups changed their mind about religion. Maybe your parents changed their minds about religion. Maybe when you grow up, you'll change your mind about religion. But the government watched Norbert. They didn't like what he was changing into. And they got nervous, and so Norbert and his wife Maria moved to the United States where they thought it would be safer for them and their 10 children. And they moved to New York, where he got a job as a Baptist minister in New York City. And then he moved to New Jersey, and he served in a church in New Jersey for 5 years. And then somehow someone invited them to a Unitarian church. In those days, Unitarian and Universalism were two separate denominations, and they joined together in 1961, and this is way before 1961. So he went to a Unitarian church, and he was very impressed, and so they became Unitarians. And he became a Unitarian minister, like me.
So eventually conditions got better in his homeland, and he decided that he wanted to return home with his family and establish a Unitarian church there. So he did that, and it was so popular that people stood in line to get in. But some of the folks there, they didn't feel as though the church had the proper spiritual dimension. So in response to that, Norbert created the Flower Communion, which we're going to have here today, where each member of the congregation would bring a flower to church, place them in the baskets, and at the end of the service, each person would take a flower home as a symbol of the uniqueness of each individual and the coming together in communion of this uniqueness. Eventually, the Unitarian Church of Czechoslovakia, which was the name of the new country that was formed, was officially recognized by the government, which is a testament to Norbert's devotion and vision to liberal religious ideas.
And it would have been good if this story had ended there. But World War II came. Some of you may know about World War II. It was a terrible war, and it tore all the European countries apart, and bad things happened. And Norbert Čapek and his daughter were arrested by the Gestapo and eventually sent to something called a concentration camp in Dachau, where they died. That was very, very sad. But when news of his death came to the United States, the president of the American Unitarian Association, Frederick May Elliott, wrote to all the Unitarians in the country and in the world, "Another name is added to the list of heroic Unitarian martyrs by whose death our freedom was bought." So because he stood up for what he believed, we can still have Unitarian churches in Europe and places where otherwise they would not have been.
So today we celebrate the Flower Communion because it's lovely, and to remember that we each in our own way also need to work to protect freedom.
So now is a time when we go inside. We've gathered, we've seen each other's faces, we've smiled and said hello. And now we go inside and check what we brought in here with us. And what are the things that we brought in here with us that are worthy and which are not? The root of the word worship is that which is of worth. And that's what we are here to do, is to notice that which is of worth and to put aside that which is not. So as you check inside and get in touch with that which is of worth, we will play music to help you do that. And you are invited to silently come forward and light a candle to mark your joy or sorrow, what is going on in your life. And there are papers in the back if you would like to write down for what you lit your candle. It will be posted so that other people can know. Please join me in the spirit of meditation and prayer. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Keep breathing. Feel the very breath of life move through you. Something you did not create. Something for which you did not ask. A gift freely given that connects us one to the other, to all that ever was and all that ever will be. Into this space that we hold for eternity, for all that ever was and all that ever will be. We hold our losses. Losses of friendships, losses of relationships, losses of people to death or moving away. Many losses. And they are real. Those relationships and those loves are real. We feel the losses. And we have joys. We have graduations from preschool, from kindergarten, from elementary school, from middle school, from high school, from college. We celebrate the wondrous achievements of our young people and some of our not so young people who went back to school to try again. And we can feel the joy of those markings. There are people who are leaving familiar homes, moving into new homes, people whose lives are in flux. All this we hold in the flow of eternal time. And here we are together in this way, and then we disperse. We will be probably smaller groups through the summer. And then enter again in September together. So let us take a moment to be mindful of all the relationships, the people, the places that have nurtured us, that sustain us, parents, grandparents, neighbors, uncles, aunts, fathers, and all the ways we have been those people for others. The good neighbor, the good friend, the good parent, the good aunt, good uncle, good sibling. And ask for forgiveness when we were not. For we were human, and we still are. For all these opportunities we have had to live and love, to fail and repair, we are amazed. For all our blessings known and unknown, remembered and forgotten, may we be truly grateful. Amen. And now for something completely different. I have a jar here that has peppermints. We can share them after the service. But each of you has a slip of paper in your order of service, and we're offered a writing implement if you did not happen to have one with you. I will walk up and down the aisle slowly so that you can see them. And your job is to guess how many mints are in this jar. Excuse me? You write on the paper your guess of the number of mints. Hello? You write on it the number, your guess of the number, but I will walk up and down just so you can not count them because I'm going to walk too fast for that. Okay. We will count those later. Will the members of our newly elected ministerial search committee please come forward as I say your name? Erica Bartlett, Lisa Freeman, Susie Hubley, Polly Juno, Charlie Mitchell, Louis Robinson, Sue Selby. What a handsome bunch. Okay. Members of the Ministerial Search Committee, you are entrusted with the privilege and responsibility of representing the Allen Avenue Unitarian Universalist Church to ministerial candidates and finding the best candidate for this congregation. Will you work together intensely and use all your skills and talents? You also have many partners in this search, not the least of which is the Spirit of Life, which abides in each of us. Remember to seek its wisdom. Avail yourself of the resources and guidance provided by the UUA and by me, your interim minister, your resource on site. Sometimes search committees forget that. I've done this before. Having given your new role careful and prayerful consideration, will you work together for the well-being, life, and future of this congregation? Will each of you endeavor to perform your duties in the spirit of integrity, diligence, and cooperation? Russ, in for the board? Oh, it's not on. Yes, the switch is on it. No, top. It's not.
Will the members of the board please stand as you are able? What a handsome bunch. Now, having heard the promises made by each member of the search committee, will you trust their leadership and will you give them your support to be successful?
Would the members of the Allen Avenue Unitarian Universalist Church please stand? As you are able. Having elected the Ministerial Search Committee at our annual meeting, will you support the efforts of the Ministerial Search with your prayers and words of encouragement, your trust, and your various talents?
We will.
We proud together with me. We proudly and with great hopes declare that you are commissioned as members of the Ministerial Search Committee to seek out and present to us your candidate for Minister of Allen Avenue Unitarian Universalist Church. May you find joy, wisdom, and grace in your work together. May you have a good and successful search. May we all be blessed by your efforts, that together we grow and flourish. Amen, and blessed be.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Francis Galton was a most interesting guy. So it just so happens we're talking about two interesting guys today. But Francis Galton was a scientist. And he was interested in a lot of things. He was the kind of person we might call today a Renaissance person. He was interested in fingerprints. statistics, meteorology, calculus, geology, measurements. He loved measurements of all kinds, including the human mind. In short, he loved anything scientific. He lived a long time ago. He lived in England in the 1800s. And some of his scientific interests and experiments interested and even influenced Charles Darwin, who took up some of his ideas. Charles Darwin was coming up at that time with his theories of evolution. Francis Dalton was also a knight, Sir Francis Dalton, part of the British upper crust. One day, Francis Dalton went to a country fair in Plymouth, a town near him, and it was like any country fair that we would have here. It had animals, it had exhibits of fruits and vegetables, and contests where people played games and people won prizes. And as he walked through the fairgrounds, he saw one of the contests that really interested him. It was one where there was an ox standing there, and the barker was having people guess what the weight of the dressed ox would be. Now, this was a man who was interested in measuring things. And as a member of the English nobility in the 1800s, he privately thought that this American democracy idea was a joke. He thought it was pretty ridiculous, bound for failure, and his curiosity was piqued that this might be a chance to demonstrate how ridiculous it was. So at the end of the day, Sir Francis went to the person in charge of the contest and asked if he could have all the guesses that had been entered that day. He was interested in figuring out, he said, what the average voter was capable of, because he thought he could easily demonstrate that the average voter was pretty stupid and not to be trusted with important decisions. There had been 787 guesses. He had to discard 13 because they were illegible. He couldn't read them. So the rest, he averaged, thinking that it would represent the collective wisdom of the crowd, much as voting does. Being the aristocrat that he was pretty sure he could guess the outcome, that the guess of the crowd would be way off. But he was wrong. The crowd guessed that the ox, after it had been dressed, would weigh 1,197 pounds. 1,197 pounds. The ox was slaughtered and dressed and then weighed. And it weighed 1,198 pounds. 1 pound different out of 1,198 pounds to guess. Pretty impressive. So Galton wrote of the experiment because he was a scientist. The result seems more credible to the trustworthiness of a democratic judgment than might have been expected. How interesting, especially coming from the English upper crust, the nobility, when we read in contrast the words from our beloved Henry David Thoreau, who had written half a century earlier, "The mass never comes up to the standard of its best member, but on the contrary degrades itself to a level with the lowest." Very interesting. So all you Thoreau lovers out there in this case, sorry to say, but he was wrong. It happens. As James Surowiecki observed, what Francis Galton stumbled upon that day was the simple, powerful truth that under the right circumstances, groups are remarkably intelligent and are often smarter than the smartest person among them. Groups are often smarter than the smartest person among them. So under what circumstances Many experiments since have determined at least two. First, that the crowd must be diverse. So it's not all from the same family, whatever. It's a haphazard group of people, that they are diverse. And that each person comes to its own conclusion. No group pressure to conform. No group think. Everyone does, as you did. Just think for yourself what the number is and write it down. I will note that on occasion, a single individual or individuals may come up with an answer closer than the answer of the group. But if you keep asking the same group, it will not be the same person over and over again who gets closer. An individual may luck out once in a while and get it right, but the group will most consistently be right. You ever watch TV shows or I listen to radio shows where the group is shouting out the right answer? And it's not because they're all super smart, but there's something about, in the aggregate, they know stuff that they don't know individually. In the aggregate, we know stuff we don't know individually. And so we gather in groups. We human beings, we spiritual, social human beings, and maximize our chances of wisdom and of making good decisions by using the democratic process. Who knew? In which each person gets a vote, often by secret ballot, and we all agree to do what the group wisdom surfaced. And the greater the diversity in our group, the greater the likelihood we will approximate the truth. With our living out of Sir Francis Dalton's experiment, we have intentionally kept our group of guessers as diverse as we are able. Young and old, long-timers and newcomers, children and youth and elders, each of you with one vote, one guess. And we will see how close we come to the truth of the number of peppermints in the jar. We may be reminded that increased diversity might make us even wiser, help us come even closer to the truth that we seek. It is an interesting and perhaps brilliant happenstance that our fourth Unitarian Universalist principle says that we are committed to the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, followed immediately by our fifth principle, committing us to the protection of the rights of conscience, which is our individual mind thinking through things, and the use of the democratic process. So we have the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, followed by the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process. We have somehow in the core of our faith, in our covenant with one another, committed to pursuing a practice of being together in a way that guides us in wise and healthy and sound decision making. These shared UU principles seem to demonstrate that indeed together we come up with something truer and better than any of us might have come up with alone. And some of us have been UUs long enough to remember before we had principles so written out. And it was that group process that surfaced them. A lot of talking. So here we are at the end of our regular church year, the beginning of summer. Many of us disperse for the summer or parts of it going on vacation, going to camp or retreats, relaxing as we can, and maybe becoming a little less wise as we disperse. And we have each brought a flower to our altar, creating an abundance of color and fragrance and beauty. As we gaze at our communion of flowers, may we also be grateful and amazed at the symbol of community. As we each take home a different flower from the one we contributed, let it remind us of how deep we have been blessed and guided by the love and wisdom of this, our beloved A2U2 crowd community. Let each of these flowers remind us what we have here in a body that we do not have alone. Do we have a number? The average of the actual guesses put in the jar was 268. However, one of those guesses was 5,000. If you take out the 5,000, the outlier, the average was 208. The actual number is 214. So it's pretty close. It's pretty close. Pretty close. So could we just stand for one moment again so we can feel the power of our, this crowd that is A2U2. Drink up. Okay, feel the hand. Feel the crowd. Feel what it feels like to be all together in one congregation at 10 o'clock. It feels different. We see people we haven't seen in a long, long time. Remember how good it feels to hold one another's hand, to be together, to see one another's faces. Remember that feeling. Remember that feeling all week long and all summer long if you're not back. And then take that with you. Go forward with peace, with love, and with fresh courage. Amen, and blessed be. So be seated for music and flowers.